Here's a startling fact. Between 2010 and 2018, Jeff Bezos paid an effective federal tax rate of just 1.1%, while his company's warehouse workers paid closer to 15%. This isn't an accident or loophole. It's the system working exactly as designed. The fundamental question isn't whether inequality exists, but how it persists despite democratic institutions supposedly built to prevent such concentration of wealth. The answer lies in understanding a distinction deliberately erased from modern economic discourse: the difference between earning money and extracting it. Think about your last paycheck. You traded hours of your life, your knowledge, effort, and time for that money. A teacher shapes young minds, a nurse provides care, an engineer designs infrastructure. These activities create tangible value that didn't exist before. But what about someone collecting rent on property they inherited, or earning dividends from stocks purchased decades ago, or profiting from currency speculation? They're receiving income too, but without producing anything new. This distinction between earned and unearned income once formed the backbone of economic thinking. Even Adam Smith, capitalism's patron saint, recognized that landlords love to reap where they never sowed. Wealth concentrates through strategic positioning, not superior contribution. When you pay rent, you're not compensating someone for creating housing, you're paying for permission to access existing space. When banks create money electronically and charge interest, they're not lending stored savings, but generating claims on your future labor. The system creates a mathematical impossibility. For some to consume without producing, others must produce without fully consuming. A worker spending half their income on rent effectively works half their hours for their landlord. This isn't wealth creation, it's wealth extraction. Consider London's exclusive neighborhoods, where mansions worth tens of millions sit empty as investment vehicles. Their values soar not through owner improvements, but because London grows. New transit, businesses, cultural venues. The community creates value. Property owners capture it. Meanwhile, the government imposes a bedroom tax on low-income families with spare rooms, rather than taxing these underutilized mansions. The absurdity reveals whose interests the system protects. Interest operates as money's rent-a-claim on future production that grows exponentially. Banks don't lend existing savings, they create new electronic money when issuing loans. Both principal and interest represent unearned income, a private tax on borrowers. Compound interest doubles debt every 14 years at 5%, creating mathematically unsustainable growth. Nigeria's former president watched $5 billion borrowed balloon to $28 billion owed, despite repaying $16 billion, compound interest working its extractive magic. Only the wealthiest 10% receive more interest than they pay. The bottom 80% hemorrhage money upward to bondholders. This isn't a side effect. It's the mechanism redistributing wealth from working people to the already rich. Modern finance has turbocharged these dynamics through securitized loans, high-frequency trading, and private equity debt loading. Finance has transformed from serving the economy to dominating it, claiming ever larger portions of national income without producing anything tangible. Capitalism's most successful decades, the 1950s and 60s, coincided with the rich having their smallest income share. Modern workers produce 15 times more than their great-grandparents, not through superior intelligence, but by accessing accumulated knowledge. From the wheel to the internet, our productive capacity builds on countless collective innovations. Even Warren Buffett acknowledges his billions depended on being born into an advanced society. If I'd been born in Bangladesh, I'd probably be living on a dollar a day. This collective inheritance, the commons, represents humanity's true wealth. The language you speak, scientific principles you apply, infrastructure you use, all gifts from previous generations. Yet capitalism privatizes this shared legacy. Patents fence off discoveries built on public research. Tech giants profit from freely available internet protocols while restricting their platforms. The rich monopolize benefits of our common inheritance while claiming individual merit justifies their fortunes. Spectacular free riding on collectively produced wealth. The system privatizes collective achievements while socializing costs, allowing a privileged few to charge rent on humanity's accumulated capabilities. The notion that markets reward contribution is economics' most persistent fairy tale. Pay reflects power, not desert. Organizations pay only what's necessary to attract candidates, not what workers deserve. A Silicon Valley developer earns triple their Midwest counterpart through market dynamics, not triple productivity. The division of labor perpetuates inequality. Some get interesting, varied, responsible work. Others get monotonous, supervised drudgery. This isn't natural ability. It shapes ability. As Adam Smith recognized, apparent intelligence differences between occupations are largely effects, not causes, of work itself. Working-class parenting emphasizes obedience. Middle-class parenting stresses reasoning and self-development, preparing children for their likely futures, taking orders, or giving them. By age 3, professional families' children have heard 30 million more words than working-class children. The level playing field is mythology. Middle-class children are 15 times more likely to get middle-class jobs. Private schools, tutoring, unpaid internships, social networks, advantages compound across lifetimes. Your birth position profoundly shapes who you become, making the field steeply sloped rather than level. Post-war shared prosperity, regulated credit, rising wages, strong unions ended when Nixon terminated Bretton Woods in 1971. Thatcher and Reagan crushed unions while raising interest rates that devastated manufacturing but enriched finance. Banking debts exploded from 50% to over 500% of GDP. With wages stagnating, companies pursued financial gains over production. By 2004, GM earned 80% of profits from its financial division. The shareholder value movement forced companies to distribute more as dividends, rising from 30% to 60% of profits, while aggressively cutting costs. Financialization transformed anything with predictable income into sellable assets: hospital parking, student loans, future tax revenues. The 2008 bailouts transferred massive debt from private to public sector, a subsidy for rentiers totaling $14 trillion, nearly a quarter of world GDP. The rich cause problems not just acquiring wealth, but spending it. The Wally Power 118 yacht burns 3,400 liters of fuel hourly at top speed. The richest 7% globally produce 50% of greenhouse gas emissions. The poorest 50% emit negligible amounts. We face a double crisis. Economic solutions demand growth that accelerates climate change, while climate solutions require contraction in wealthy nations. Green growth defies physics. Despite 33% better energy efficiency since 1970, emissions rose 80% because growth outpaced gains. Capitalism requires perpetual growth. Workers must produce enough for wages, costs, and owners, shareholders, landlords, and speculators. Competition forces constant productivity increases. A capitalist economy where enough is enough is impossible, yet planetary survival demands exactly that. Creating sustainable societies requires targeting unearned income. Nationalize land and minerals, or implement land value taxes. Reform credit to serve democratic rather than speculative purposes. Transform business ownership so workers have representation. Implement progressive wealth taxation. We must leave fossil fuels underground while rapidly developing sustainable energy. A green army could retrofit buildings, creating jobs oriented towards sufficiency rather than growth. The rich live beyond our means and the planet's. Their interests conflict with the 99% and the environment. Freed from excessive competition, overwork, and economic insecurity, we could enjoy climate stability and environmental care. The choice isn't between prosperity and sustainability, it's between shared prosperity for all or continued extraction for the few.